We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today, I'm chatting with New York Times bestselling author John Acuff. John has written 5 books, including his most recent called Finish. He's helped some of the biggest brands in the world tell their story, including Home Depot, Bose, Staples, and the Dave Ramsey team. He's spoken to hundreds of thousands of people at companies such as Microsoft, Nissan, and Comedy Central. And today we've got him on Proof to Product talking about misconceptions around productivity and goal setting, how to set yourself up for success, and why it's okay to let yourself be bad at certain things. Hey, John, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Katie.
Of course. So what is the biggest misconception that people have about productivity and goal setting?
It's a great question. Part of why I write is I like to really dig into the things we believe and see if they're true. So I would say one of them is the myth of the huge, massive, scary goal. People say, aim for the moon, because even if you fail, you'll land amongst the stars. But that's not what really happens either in research or in real life. So an example of that is if somebody tells me they want to lose 10 pounds and they only lose 8, they feel like they failed and they give up. They don't go, well, I got close. Most people grade on a pass-fail scale when it comes to goals. But if I get you to cut your goal in half to 5 and you lose the same 8 pounds, you won by 3 and you try again.
Right.
And so psychologically, that's a huge lesson, because a lot of our goal books are written as if we're robots and we're logical, and we're not. We're emotional. We do things that are irrational. And so I think that's one of the biggest, like most dangerous myths is the, I've never run before, I have to sign up for a marathon. Mm-hmm. And you go, oh, like what about a 5K or even a single K? Like 1K. And so I think that's one of the biggest myths.
I agree with you. I think, you know, this concept of dream big, we sometimes set ourselves up for failure in a way because we dream a little too big. And it's not that we won't ever get to what that big goal or that big dream is, but like you were saying, kind of going through the smaller steps to get to that bigger step.
Yeah, you still have the big goal. Like that's the issue. You still have that. It's just how you proceed to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be your only destination.
Absolutely.
You can't say, I'm going to drive from New York to LA and all I'm going to think about is LA. And you want to go, well, you're going to stop like a bunch of times in between. Like, that's okay. And so, I think that's one of the things I see. A lot of people say, I'm going to write a book in a month, or I'm going to launch my stationery product line by this spring. And they don't go in knowing all the little goals they have to do to get there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely agree with you. So tell us about your career path. How did you get to this point of writing 5 books and becoming a New York Times bestseller?
Well, I was in marketing. That was my background. I was in marketing for about 15 years, working with big brands like Staples and Home Depot and Bose. And the internet for me was this massive new opportunity. I remember in college being really jealous of the basketball players, because at our school they were kind of superstars. And I thought, it's so unfair that what they're best at is a public thing. And what I was best at was making quirky comments and writing.
Yeah.
And I felt like nobody cares about that. And then all of a sudden the internet was like, here's a huge platform for exactly the thing you're good at. And so I started a couple blogs. And then one of them went viral and I got to write a book based on that. And it wasn't a huge book. I mean, I always tell people, because some people think, and I'm sure it's like with some of the people listening to this, like you have a great product launch in the spring, or maybe like your wedding sales crush and people go, oh, you're going to quit your job tomorrow?
Yeah.
And you go, that's not how that works. Like I got $30,000, which means after agent fees, taxes, all that, I got $13,000. And so it wasn't like my life changed overnight. It's just that I started to slowly go, okay, I'm going to speak at events now. And then I'm going to add this other part and this other part and this other part. And then I got to do a job where I got to learn a lot about how to speak, how to be a personality.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 4 years ago, I started my own company because I just felt like there's so much opportunity. And so but it's been the first book, or that website came out in 2008. So it's been 9 years. It hasn't been quick.
So how has your life, you kind of alluded to this a few minutes ago, how has your life shaped the topics that you've chosen to write about in the past?
Well, I always tell business owners, entrepreneurs, writers, whoever, find a question you're curious about personally. I was just thinking about that today where like grow something or build something that even if it's not wildly successful, your life is better. So for me, I knew that even if this book doesn't like blow up, my life will be better having learned how to finish things. Mm-hmm. And so I take the curiosity and then I look for a real need. And what happened was I wrote this book called Start a few years ago. And all these people came up to me over the years and would say, hey, no offense, I like your book, but I've never had a problem starting. How do I finish? Mm-hmm. And you know, that for me was, I didn't know the answer. And so, and that really bothered me. And it stuff, other stuff bothered me, like 81 to 90% of Americans want to write a book according to the New York Times and less than 1% do, which means we are missing 250 million books every year. Like, and that should, I mean, that should make us sad.
Yeah.
Like it should, you know, think about the businesses we're missing. Think about the opportunities that people don't chase. And so I saw a need in my own life. I wasn't good at finishing. And I saw a need in the marketplace. And I think that's a really powerful place to be.
So you actually started to address my next question, was that what did you learn by writing Start that made you want to do Finish? So it sounds like it was both a combination of your own internal desires, but also the needs of your audience that was coming up to you after your speaking engagements and things like that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think I leaned too heavy on the Start. Like I kind of bought into... Another popular myth when it comes to goals is well begun is half done. The hardest part of any journey is the first step. That's not even close to true. Like you've done businesses. You'd never say day one was the most difficult. Like day one, you have cake and people cheer for you.
Yeah.
Like the middle is where it sucks. And so I think that, and the phrase I've come to say is starting is fun, but the future belongs to finishers.
I agree with you. The start is fun. You have the adrenaline. You have the excitement for what you're doing. It's a new idea.
The work
idea.
Hasn't showed up yet either. Like right. The real hard work isn't the embarrassing things you have to do don't happen on day one.
Right.
Like there's a lot of embarrassing things you have to do to grow something. Like that's just a reality. And we don't talk about that. We glamorize the beginning. You know, it's like very few people are cheering in the middle. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you go to a race, you stand at the beginning or the finish. The middle is pretty lonely.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, that made me want to write a book that would help somebody get through the middle.
Yeah. But at the same time, going back to something you said earlier, you know, celebrating those successes all the way through, you know, even in the middle, if you're hitting little goals throughout the way, making sure that you're celebrating the successes that you're hitting to get you to that finish line, to get you closer to that finish line is something.
Oh, 100%. I mean, when I finished a draft of the book, I bought myself ski boots.
Nice.
And it wasn't like that wasn't gigantic. And I could have purchased them at any point. I just tied that celebration to that moment. And that was fun.
Nice. So one of the things I say to my community often, and even myself, is that done is better than perfect. And you share a similar sentiment in Finnish, saying that the less people aimed for perfect, the more productive they became. Can you talk about why you think perfectionism is a productivity killer?
Well, the first problem is we think it's a character trait and that it's good. You know, like whenever somebody in an interview goes, what's your weakness at a job interview? And they go, I'm kind of a perfectionist. They think that's good. Mm-hmm. And so I think right out of the gate, we look at it the wrong way. We think it's a benefit versus a detriment. We also think it's possible, which it's not. Like in a book I wrote, Start, I said that this player, Terrell Owens, caught 1,000 touchdown passes in his career. He caught 100. I was off by a factor of 10. 50 people read that book, like experts, and nobody caught it. In Do Over, my book after that, I said that Stick was the mentor of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's actually Splinter. Stick is the mentor of Daredevil. And like, so geeky. But like, of course, every nerd was like, hey, no offense, that was wrong. Every book I've ever written hasn't been perfect. I like to say it this way. Amazon has never sold a perfect book.
Yeah.
They've just sold millions of books by brave, imperfect people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the same goes for people that are making products. I'm always telling them, you know, the longer you wait to get it just right or just perfect, you're going to miss your window of opportunity too.
Oh, 100%. I mean, And the thing is, like, you're going to change and grow anyway. What even your definition of what you thought was really good when you start is different a year later or different 2 years later. I guarantee somebody who's been doing this for 5 years looks back at their first designs and goes, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
Like, I didn't, like, I was all flowery script. Like, it's all I knew how to do. So I kept going back to that well, and I'm so glad I have a bigger font palette. You know, like, we change and we grow. And perfect to me means you're not trying hard enough and you're not doing new things. Like, for instance, I just got a bicycle, like a road bike, and I've been riding with guys in the neighborhood and I suck at it. Like, I am, like, when we start right at the beginning, they're already like 300 yards ahead of me. Like, I'm the worst at it, but you know what? It means I'm trying something new. Like, so I tell people, go be terrible at something new.
You have a chapter in your book actually called Choosing What to Bomb, and you share four things that you're willing to be terrible at in order to maintain focus on the projects that are most important to you. So what are the benefits to identifying and being okay with being bad at certain things? Because that's hard for a lot of people.
Oh, it's really hard. I mean, I think mom guilt is such an epidemic.
Oh God, yes it is.
And it existed in the 40s, I'm sure, but like, you didn't have Instagram to make it even worse. Mm-hmm. Cause like, every mom on Instagram is posting a picture of their 2-year-old who taught himself Mandarin. And you're like, oh my gosh. Like,
and potty trained himself, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so I think I like to say it this way. You have a choice, shame or strategy. Shame says I should be able to get it all done. And then when you can't, you feel ashamed. Strategy says, these three things, I'm not even going to care about them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think one of my favorite examples in the book was a mom who works full time. And she said, when I have a busy season at work, the kids know that the laundry gets clean, but not folded and put away. Mm-hmm. And meals get made, but they're simple. It's hot dogs. It's pizza rolls. And so she could try, you know, her choice there is beat myself up, feel like a failure because I got a busy season at work, or say ahead of time, like, hey, mom's busy, so it's wrinkled clothes time. And the kids know. And so I think, you know, the problem, another myth of goal setting is, if, you know, when you read a book, they'll say, oh, you got a financial goal, you should have a spiritual goal and a health goal and a, like, a relational goal. There's 7 main parts of life. Have a goal for each. But if you told me, Katie, I'm going to try to learn German, and I wouldn't say you should learn 6 other languages at the same time.
Right.
You would say that's really dumb. That'll make learning German hard. And so that's what I mean. Like, another example is when we had young kids, I did not care about the yard. Like, the yard was terrible. But I had 2 toddlers under the age of 3. Like, you're just in survival mode. So I think it's important, you know, if you're growing a business right now and you've got a stationery line you love, like, I think it's important for you to know, okay, for the next 6 months, I'm not going to be good at hiring new employees. Like, I have enough work that I can do myself. My head's going to be down. I'm not going to focus on that. So I'm not going to feel bad about it. I'm just going to go ahead and choose ahead of time. I'm going to suck at that, and that's fine. And I'll do something different. Or Christmas. Like, during the Christmas season, you shouldn't beat yourself up for not researching new spring ideas yet. Like, you're probably just got your head above the water. Like, that's okay. And so that's what I mean by choosing ahead of time.
I'm a big fan of, I call them life hacks or shortcuts. Yeah, I mean, I order groceries for delivery. We have a house cleaner that comes a couple times a month. I have 4 small children. I don't know if I shared that with you. My oldest is 7. And so I'm constantly trying to find shortcuts to maintain the sanity around here. And you shared a few of those simplifying tools or tricks in your book. I think your wife does something similar of ordering groceries or things like that. Can you speak a little bit about how, if you can't say no to something, straight out no, how maybe simplifying is the next best step?
Yeah. So, I mean, life doesn't work that way. Like, where you could just go, I'm not going to do these 10 things that I don't like. My life doesn't work that way.
Right.
So there's a couple different things you can do. You can simplify it. One way is you can try to get help for it. Like, you don't have to do this one person approach to life, you know, this one woman, one man approach. So you can hire it. You can say, you know, like, you hiring house cleaning is a simplification. Me hiring a yard guy is a simplification, where I say, okay, I can't do this, so I'm going to simplify it. Another is, you know, being kinder about your results. Mm-hmm. Shonda Rhimes, who does Scandal and just signed like gigantic deal with Netflix, says that when she's running a show, she doesn't get to go to the gym much. She simplifies that. So another simplification would be holding yourself to a lower standard in the right way. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people that they go, I'm going to run 5 miles every day. And then one day they're too busy and they go, I'm not going to run because I won't get the full five in. And you go, you want to say like, but you know, three is way more than zero.
Right.
Like it's way more. And they're like, no, it has to be five. And so like tweaking your standards for a time period and saying, okay, I'm going to simplify that. And, mm-hmm. and that's fine. It doesn't have to be the full thing right this second.
Awesome. So I'm a kind of a self-proclaimed numbers geek. And so when you had your section about data and measurement, it really excited me. How does data and measurement of progress play a part in reaching goals? Can these numbers and analytics be a hindrance as well as a help in reaching goals?
Well, they can be a hindrance if you use them as a hiding place. Mm-hmm. You know, anything can be used incorrectly. Medicine, is Advil okay? Yeah, an Advil is okay. Is 100 okay? No, it's not. And so you could definitely hide in the data in the same way that like a lot of authors hide in their outline. They go, until the outline's just right, I can't start writing. And it's never going to be just right. You're hiding in it. But what I like about data is data tells the truth. Data is not swayed by emotion. And so, you know, you've sold products before. There's nothing as discouraging as sending like an email to 10,000 people, having an expectation on how many will buy the thing and then seeing the real number. What's helpful, and I've had this happen a million times, is going, wait a second, how many people bought the last thing when we did something like this? And you look at the number and go, oh, okay, we're right on track. Like that's data saying, here's the honest truth. Data is just honest and not swayed by emotions. And I think that's powerful as you build what is often an emotional business.
Mm-hmm. What about looking at past data? Do you find that to be distracting or do you find that to be helpful?
I think that's helpful. I mean, again, I think you can take anything to an extreme, but I think that's informative.
Yeah.
If you know what you did. Okay, so I have a calendar. Like I have this huge wall calendar that I've always loved. And finally, I just went to the company and was like, hey, I love your calendars. Can we do a partnership? And they said, sure. And so we have a big finish calendar. So it's like 2018, the year of finish. I said to my assistant, how many did we sell last year? And she told me that number. And that helped me inform my number for the future.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think, and it keeps you honest. I have a friend who was trying to lose weight and he said, oh, it was so much easier last time. And he had no data. If he had data, he could look at it and go, actually, you know what? It was really hard. Like I ran a lot more than I remember. I forget that. Like we forget the trials and sometimes we end up, you know, shaming ourselves. Or you have people listening that have started new product lines and they don't remember what the old one was like and they judge it and go, oh, the old one sold so much better. So quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had data, they could go, wait a second. No, it didn't. Like it was every bit as hard. Like, oh, okay. Well, that makes me feel better.
Yeah. I think you're right. We look at the end goal of like, with your friend that was losing weight, he looked at what he lost and probably was focused on that rather than, gosh, how long did it take me to get there? Or what were some of the like hurdles I had to do to get there?
What was the effort? I mean, because remember, you can measure results and you can measure actions.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, okay, I connected with this many people or I had this many sales. Like there's a million points of data you can use.
So speak to that a little bit more, results or actions. When you're setting your goals, do you always just look to the end result or do you actually map out all the action steps that you want to take to get there?
Yeah. So let's take growing your email list.
Okay.
People always ask me that and they say, businesses always go, what's the most important social media? And they hate that my answer is email.
I love that your answer is email.
But it's not sexy. Like people, Twitter and like there's sexier things, but email is still what pays the bills.
True.
And like one of my examples I always give people is that I've heard many people say, I just stopped using Twitter for a few months, or I took a few months off of Facebook. I've never heard somebody say, I took a few months off of email. Like I just stopped looking at email for 6 months. Like nobody says that. You'd be insane. And so, you know, what the things I can measure, there's a couple things. Now, clearly I can measure how many new subscribers did I get today.
Mm-hmm.
I can measure how many did I lose when I sent out an email. Those are results. Action-wise, I have a chart that I go, I think I'll show you the chart. It won't, you know, people won't be able to see it, but you'll be able to see it.
Yeah.
I have a chart where I measure, okay, you can see like it's color-coded. Like how many times did I tweet a link to my email sign up? How many times did I Facebook Live about it? How many times did I put it on Instagram?
Yeah.
So then I know, like I've heard people say this, you don't control the results. I don't. Like I can influence them, definitely. But what I can measure and feel good about is saying, I did my job. I showed up at the factory. I did 8 hours today. Like, I'm good. I can feel satisfied knowing I put in the work. Were the results exactly what I wanted? They weren't. But it's the same thing when clients go, we want to go viral. And I go, oh yeah, there's a button. Sure. That'll be right. Super easy. I can't control that. What I control is we did everything we could in our power. And that's very powerful to measure.
Yeah. My paper loving heart enjoys that you have all of that in an analog type notebook rather than Asana or Trello or something like that.
No, I have a ton of I have a stack of notebooks. I have, so I just showed you that one. And it's like, how do you say it? You're a paper person. The German one's like Lukturum or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I have a best self notebook. I love that.
We've got Lukturum. A whole audience that makes a ton of great notebooks. But my point is just, I think one of the other thing too, I think our community struggles with in terms of goal setting and project management is that they do get caught up in all the different technologies that are out there. And sometimes I think that helps us move further ahead with our goals, but other times I feel like it becomes a hindrance because we're spending so much time mapping out the different, I mean, you definitely need to plan to hit these goals, right? But at what point do you just need to jump in and start things too? And I know that goes
you don't have to, like, you shouldn't wait to do some action. Like, you can do actions the same day you planned.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime somebody's like, well, we're still in the planning phase, I'm much more of a, you know, in software, it's the difference between waterfall approach and agile. Waterfall is we do planning and that takes 4 weeks and then we do design and then we do concept and then we do development. Where Agile says we launch one new thing every 2 weeks mm-hmm. and we learn and then we iterate and we learn and we iterate. I think that's, especially a small business person, that's so much smarter. You don't have the luxury. Like when people, I don't put on my own events right now. And sometimes people are like, you should. And I go, yeah, but they don't make money. And they go, yeah, it's a loss leader. I'm a small business. I don't have space for a loss leader. Mm-hmm. Like the things I do have to produce and I have to like, my Facebook ads have to produce. I'm not just doing them for fun or exposure. Right. And so if you're a small business, you need to, there's actions you can do every day, even as you plan.
Love that. So what advice would you give to product-based business owners who struggle with the follow-through on projects? They're big idea people. They have lots of things they want to do. You know, I know Finish presents a lot of it, but what are the core things that you think they should be focusing on?
Well, I mean, if they have trouble with follow-through, I would tie that to something they care about. The book talks about how there's two main forms of motivation that scientists study. There's fun motivation and fear motivation. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean fear in a bad way in this sense. They call it approach or avoidance. Approach motivation is, if I do this thing, I'll approach this reward. Avoidance is, if I do this thing, I won't have to worry about such and such happening. And from a health perspective, say you go to the doctor and you're fun motivated, the doctor needs to tell you, if you lose weight, you'll be able to hike Cinque Terre with your husband this summer in Italy. Like, that's a fun thing. If you're fear motivated, he needs to say, if you don't lose weight, you'll get diabetes and you won't make it to your daughter's wedding. Mm-hmm. And so a big thing for people running a product business is to go, okay, if I launch this thing, here's the things that it'll trigger. Here's right. the good things that'll happen. Or, you know, for me, like giving a speech, I prepare because I don't want to bomb. Like, that's my fear. And so I use that to motivate me. So I would say a lot of times, maybe you have the wrong motivation. You know, businesses think, okay, I have to be about the money, have to be about the money, have to be about the money. And you do need your revenue, right? But it might be for you about changing lives. It might be like, maybe it's for you that you need more access to the people using your stuff so that you can go, oh, that's right, I got into this because it's amazing to know people are writing handwritten thank you notes to their mom using something I created. And yeah. that's why I started this. And I got lost in the money, which I don't care about. That's not my motivation. I need to be connected to people. And then you reattach to that.
What about the balance? I mean, you know, we obviously, if this is their full-time gig, they need to make money to support themselves and pay their bills. But at the same time, they are driven by wanting to help others or see their work out in the world and the creative side of it. What do you tell people about that balance?
And well, I mean, one of the things, and I just wrote this resource on how to charge more, like almost every business I work with undercharges, especially yeah. if a small business. I mean, illustrators, I met an illustrator and I asked him to double his rate mm-hmm. on the spot. And I talked to him a year later and he had quadrupled it. Nice. And it was, and so I think that's part of the balance. I'm not a huge money guy. I like it. I like the competition of it more than the actual thing of it. Mm-hmm. But the balance is you don't get to do the passion very long if the profit isn't there.
Right.
Like there has to be kind of, and like some give and take on that. And so I think it's perfectly fine to say, this is a passion project, so it's not going to make a ton of money. This is a profit one. And it's going to, you know, there are some projects when you're a small business owner where you're a mercenary, in essence, saying, okay, like you might find you have 10 product lines and your favorite one is your lowest seller, but it's your highest passion. And so you have one where you're like, it's not my style. I don't love it, but boy, does it put the food on the table. And that, like, there's nothing to be ashamed about that. That's you identifying a niche market and going, wow, I'm getting to serve a lot of people, which I enjoy doing. Is it exactly what I like? No, it's not. But I'm so happy people are connecting to it.
Shame has come up recently, and you talked about it a little bit earlier in this conversation about in relation, I think it was to mom guilt. You know, how is shame playing a part in reaching goals and goal setting and running these businesses for entrepreneurs?
Well, I mean, it's rampant in the sense, think about it this way. When you make a goal, it's not just a goal, it's a promise. You've made a promise to yourself. And every time you break that promise, it gets harder to keep the next one. It's like if you had a friend, Katie, that said, hey, let's go to coffee, and they didn't show up. And then they did it a second time and a third time and a fourth time. You wouldn't trust that person.
Right.
And so the problem is a lot of us have trouble starting goals because we've lied to ourselves so many times that we don't even believe it. Mm-hmm. You know, we start to make a goal and internally we hear, oh yeah, sure. I'm sure we'll do this one. So that's where kind of shame takes root. And so for me, that's a big part of it is forgiving yourself for the times you didn't. And then saying, okay, this time's going to be different. Here's what I'm going to do to ensure that it's different. And then also having community. I mean, I'm sure you know, with your audience, your listeners, the community you have, it's a big part of it. Like, we're not supposed to do this alone. And running a business is a very isolating experience.
It is.
You need other people.
Absolutely. Which actually leads well into my next question about accountability. You know, there's a lot of people that are hosting mastermind things or pairing people up with accountability partners, whether it's a paid program or just friends that are connecting as accountability partners. How do you feel that that influences goal setting? Not only making the goals, setting the goals, but achieving the goals.
Yeah. One of the things that's interesting, there's an author named Derek Sievers who wrote about this. If you tell people your goal the wrong way, it actually does you damage.
Oh,
and so, for example, if I say, I'm going to start a business, people pre-congratulate me. They go, oh, good for you. Like, that's so hard. Like, way to be brave. And your body releases dopamine just from telling people that. Uh-huh. And the problem is it's enough for you to be satisfied and you don't end up doing the thing.
Interesting.
So the right way to tell a network or a community is, hey, will you ask me at the end of every week if I've done these three things I'm trying to do? Like, will you check in with me? That's accountability.
Yeah.
And so I think it's vital. The other thing is that people can see the truth in a way you can't sometimes because you're so close to it.
Yeah.
It's so, especially if it's a passion project, especially, I mean, you know, because a lot of the people that listen to this, they did something well that they enjoyed and they turned it into a business. And so they're so in the weeds of it that you need a friend on the outside to go, hey, there's this thing I think you need to be careful about, or hey, there's this thing I think you need to celebrate. Like, it happened, and you know, and I'm excited for you. And I think you're so busy, you just rush right by it.
Yeah.
We need people like that to tell us those things.
I'm chuckling on this side because I just had that same experience with my team recently. I was given an award in our industry and I was like, oh no, it's good. We don't need to talk about it. And my team's like, no, we need to celebrate this.
That's great. So, yeah, exactly.
And I only bring that up simply to say, like, we are too far in the weeds. And that's not just a problem for people that are at the beginning stages of their business. It's all along the way. We need these reminders of.
Yeah. You know, and you're just running so hard. I mean, my wife will say, you know, I said, oh, I hope Finish does well. It'd be awesome if it blew up. And she'll say, you know, we've already done well. Like, that's already happened. Like, you write books. Like, you've been on the New York Times multiple times. Like, what are you talking about? I hope it does well. Like,
right. This
is, everything is gravy at this point. Like, it's good. So
right. She
keeps
me saying. And that's where it goes back to changing your mindset, right? And changing your perspective around what success looks like and what it means to you.
Oh, well, and also a big part of it is coming to grips with the fact that you don't control the miracle.
Yep.
Like, you control, I control a certain number of sales of my book. I, like, through my hustle, my hard work, whatever. I don't control Kathy Lee Gifford finding the book and putting it on the Today Show and it selling a million copies. I just, like, you're every listener right now, they control a certain amount of sales with their hard work and their dedication. They don't control, I don't know, Target saying, we want to order 10 million units. Like,
right. That's
out of your control. And I hope you experience it. But what I hope you don't do is hold on to the thought that you have to control it. because you'll make yourself miserable and you'll constantly feel like you're failing.
Yeah. I think it goes back to what you said earlier too. If we just need to put our best foot forward, we need to make sure we're doing the work for the visibility component of it. And then there's a bit of luck that goes along with it too.
There is. Right? We don't like to say, like, nobody likes to talk about that, but every successful, truly wildly successful person I know, if they're honest, will say like, yeah, and then this thing happened that I just did not see coming. And I think you can increase your odds of stuff happening in that, like, if you're out, you know, if I'm at 10 trade shows connecting, I'll probably meet more people that could potentially turn into something than if I went to one.
Right.
But I think ultimately, yeah, we don't like to say, I see so many motivators that are like, luck is so dumb, like it's for lazy people. And I think that's so dishonest.
Yeah, I think it's dishonest too, because things sometimes do just fall in your lap. And I say they fall in your lap, but you've done things leading up to that to make that fall in your lap, right?
And like, you amplify it. Like, that's the other thing, is right, that you're able to amplify it. If you've done a good job running a small business and you get an opportunity to sell 200,000 of something and you've built a team that can handle that, then yeah, the person whose daughter found a card you made and loved it, that was lucky. Right. Your ability to fulfill it and act on it, that was preparation.
Absolutely. I love that. Well, where can people find you online and where can they buy your book?
You can find me at acuff.me, which is just acuff.me. And then I write a weekly idea for entrepreneurs every week. It's just acuff.me/business.
Oh, nice. We'll definitely link that in the show notes too.
Yeah, it's fun. I get to really nerd out on business stuff. And then the book's available everywhere. Everywhere books are sold. Amazon's certainly easy. Barnes & Noble. So yeah, it's an audio, and I read the audio and I added a ton of bonus content, which is fun.
Oh, excellent.
So yeah, it's all over the place. And then Twitter, I'm just John Acuff, JonAcuff.
Fantastic. We'll make sure all of those links are in the show notes for anyone that's interested in grabbing the book or connecting with you online. I got to say, I was really impressed with the book. I got an early copy of it and just plowed right through it. It was really interesting. And I felt like it related a lot to not only the things that I'm going through in my business, but I know that I'm hearing the same struggles or the same hurdles from my audience and from my community and from my coaching clients too. And so thank you for one, writing it, but then also making the time to come and chat with me today.
Yeah, really totally. This was fun. I appreciate it. I, anytime I get to meet a new audience is a good day to me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, John.
Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.